You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin of Lakers Daily. This is the long-awaited Lakers Daily All Access Lakers crossover. Not the full squad that we could possibly have here, as Shub is currently in Florida. But that is coming. That'll be something that'll be a top priority for me to knock out. Probably not before the playoffs end, seeing as that's only a couple games away, but definitely in the off season. I am joined, obviously, you guys see Raj, you guys know Raj, but first time guest here, Rome, our dude Rome, Coach Rome on Twitter, is a good dude, entertaining dude. I'm really excited to have you on the show, man. Raj, I would ask how you're doing. We know. Rome, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm grateful you guys got me on here. Always been a fan, and I'm just excited, very excited.
This blew me away. Raj, before we went live, said this is the first game ever that since it has ended, he hasn't touched.
Could not do it.
What? Gone back and rewatched anything. This is going to lead to a debate, and we'll get to the debate portion of all of this here in a second. But Raj, you haven't gone back and rewatched anything? Like, you're just that kind of broken? That is incredible.
We recorded our post game show really late, and I did not move from my office chair for another one to like at least 1.5 hours, at least, just sitting there. In wasn't completely dark, but the room definitely felt dark. So no, I've not gone back and touched this at all. I used today as like just a break. Like, I have 2 days before the next game. So no, I am fresh off just that game. I have not gone back and touched anything. No pods, no videos, no highlights. I didn't even want to watch NBA game. I put on Pacers Bucks. I thought that was safe, like it's a safe place to live in. So no, I have not touched any of it.
Mm-mm. That is a terrible reawakening to basketball, is Pacers Bucks. Like, anything out of the East is just garbage. And like that would actually make me like consider just leaving. Like, if this is basketball, I can just leave. Like, if this is I can just stop watching. I don't need to keep watching
something else.
Yeah. I was almost like, the only thing more shocking than that revelation would have been Raj saying like he checked out an episode of The Office.
Right, yeah. I put my hand into TV.
Anything relevant, any pop culture right. thing that everyone yeah. knows. Yeah.
No, the other aspect, the other half of that conversation, though, was Raj saying this is the worst loss of his fandom. Right now, Raj is a little younger than me. I think Rome, he's a little younger than both of us, right? Or no, I think you guys are about the same age, right? Yeah.
Around the yeah. same age. But my fandom started in 07. So like that's kind of where it started.
Okay. So you were still relatively new in 08 when the Lakers lost game four to the Celtics and
right.
gave up a 24-point lead in the finals to the Celtics.
Man.
That's the loss that crushed me the most. That's the most brutal loss of my lifetime. You could throw the Tim Thomas game into that category. You could throw, I guess, like it was like was a game. I think they lost game three to the Pistons, and it really looked like, oh man, this is not going to go well. But to me, 08, losing to the Celtics in the finals, giving up that 24-point lead, I will never forget feeling as helpless and as hopeless as I did when Ray Allen had Sasa Vujacic isolated at the top of the key and right. immediately drove right by him and basically iced the game there. I really, really disagree with that being the worst loss of my lifetime. Rome, like where do you stand in this debate?
You know, it's funny. I actually tweeted like today, like this was one of the worst losses in one Laker of for history. Sure. Like it's probably in the top five. I think me personally, it might be number one, man. And like, you know, obviously, you know, the Celtics series that you alluded to was pretty bad. I thought when we played OKC, the young OKC, like with Russ and Kate, that to me, that was super demoralizing. Like, that was a very demoralizing series for me.
When KD was checking Kobe.
Yeah,
Oh, my like, God. This might be over.
Yeah, it was like, oh, we're done, aren't we? Like, that was kind of that just terrible realization. I think this one, just because of how invested I've been into, you know, this team, honestly, like even more so than I've always been my whole life. But the past couple of years, this one kind of like it stings different, right? Like this one feels like I feel like we just all probably collectively woke up today like, dang, like how do you even do anything else but think yeah. about what just happened last night? Like playback, we were all just like, oh,
that's why.
Over. Like
the one, the aspect of it that hurts the most, because and I guess this would kind of differentiate between this and 08. 08 was just shocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers were probably the lesser team there in that series. Bynum was kind of hobbled. Ariza was hobbled. That Lakers team had been together for all of a few months, basically. So it was kind of crazy that they were in that position to begin with, but it was still the Celtics, man. Like,
yeah.
I hate that team. I hate that city. Like it just, like, everything about those fuckers on the East Coast. Like I can't stand any of them literally. Like every time we get a super comment, this is what I play. Like that is what, like that is just a foundational element of my being is how much I hate that team. So losing to them in the finals, it also hurt too, losing in that series, because the Lakers had a chance at Kevin Garnett. And if you get KG, you probably rip off like a three-peat there, yeah. I would imagine.
Right.
If he stays yeah. healthy. Now I wasn't able to stay healthy, so that's kind of a factor there too. But that game hurt so much. And I also think like a big factor there is that it was Kobe versus like this gang of characters, this cast of characters who like I'm invested in them because it's a team that I've covered and I've covered really like a lot more closely than I followed even those Lakers. But it's like Kobe just meant so much more. And watching Kobe lose in the finals just was really painful. Ross, do you want to take back yet? Now that I mentioned Kobe?
No, I don't want to take it back. Like, I would just say, obviously, that was also heartbreaking. And again, that was my first year of fandom. So, like, what a way to kind of welcome in is losing in the finals. But that was more, I like look more fondly on that team. Like, that was more of a magical year, right? And it reminds me a lot of the team from a year ago, where that team was not supposed to be, you know, in the playoffs or advancing in rounds. And they did, and they lost to the better team. I think in 08, we lost to the better team. And I think last year, we also lost to the better team. And this year, we might as well. We might lose to the better team. But yeah, that's why, like, when I look and we watch these games live on playback, and when the Nuggets cut it to 6 or whatever, there was a feeling of hopelessness in all of us that you could see it in all our eyes. There was a feeling of dread of, like, I've seen this movie 300 times and I'm about to see the same script play out again. And like that wasn't there against Boston. As much as that loss sucked, I didn't leave that finals thinking there was no hope to beat Denver, to beat Boston, excuse me. So yeah, I still put that as number one. Jamal Murray hitting a game winner. Like, if Paul Pierce hit a game winner in game 4 over Kobe, like that would suck, right? Like, to me, that would hurt a lot worse. And that's what I compare that to. So
I thought that the Lakers had a better chance in that series than the Lakers have in this one. Like, I really didn't have much faith going into this series against the Nuggets, right? And we'll talk. That is one of the topics that I kind of want to talk about a little bit here is I spent a lot of today thinking about the offseason. Like, I spent a lot of the day thinking about, like, not this upcoming one, but the last one, like the one that led that got them here, right? And how, like, as it was happening, the point that I kept making is, like, if this roster isn't enough, there is almost no flexibility to improve it, right? That doesn't involve moving a rotation player. And that's what we saw at the deadline. The name that kept on coming up that the Lakers were going to have to move if they were going to make any kind of an upgrade was D'Angelo Russell 1 or Austin Reeves 2, right? You couldn't move Vanderbilt because of the extension that he signed. You let Beasley and Bamba walk. You hard capped yourself by signing Taurean Prince and Gabe Vincent. And I know a lot of this is hindsight being 2020, you know, nobody could have predicted, like, Vanderbilt missing as much of the season as he did. And nobody could have predicted Vincent missing as much of the season as he did. But even when it happened, I was like, are we sure you really want to, like, hard cap yourself for Gabe Vincent and Taurean Prince? Are you sure about this? You know, and then, you know, further to that point, if you only sign one of those two guys, you don't wind up being hard capped. And if you sign one of those two guys and you bring back Beasley and you bring back Bamba, you have $20 million of expiring contract plus the draft pick that the Lakers could have moved this year. And that's a decent trade package given what we know teams were prioritizing it at this year's deadline. And that's the part of this that, like, that's what hurts. Like, last night's game in and of itself, I've seen the movie often enough. It'd be like being disappointed that the Washington Generals lost when you went there wearing a Washington Generals jersey. And you're like, man, I can't believe they lost this one. But, like, going through that off season and then arriving here and not upgrading the backup center spot, not getting bigger. You could make the argument the Lakers were actually, like, potentially smaller here because of who was available in this series than they were last year. Yeah. You had smaller going up against a super big and physical team. That's where I was focused on over the course of the day today. And those are the regrets that I look back on. Rome, like, what was, while you were kind of going through it today and you were thinking on that game, where did your brain keep on going back to that, like, was either the moment that you arrived back at that you were like, man, if they only did this differently here in this moment, or a series of decisions? Is it a Darvin thing? Where did your brain just keep circling back to when you were kicking chairs?
I think and Raj knows I'm kind of was more of a advocate as well as you, is just like, we got to improve upon what we have, as opposed to trying to, you know, see this thing through at the deadline. But I like that you mentioned the going back with Bamba and Beasley and having, you know, a little bit of, you know, money to play with just in regards of some type of trade filler.
Yeah.
We made a draft pick this summer. And
we're doing that now.
Listen, I won't go too far. Listen, Raj, you know I love you, bro. I'm not here to.
Come on, man.
It's almost like
he wasn't even in Denver.
When Ant throws you an alley oop, it's just like sometimes you just gotta slam it home. But
Raj isn't even here right now. We could talk. We're good. It's just you and me. You can just say what you gotta say. Oh, hey, Raj, how's it going, bud?
This isn't right. This is not right, man.
No, but I mean, to Ant's point, I mean, this is you're coming off of Western Conference Finals, okay? And like clearly we weren't good enough. We got swept, whether it was close or not, that's neither here nor there. And you think going into an offseason, you know, all the talk was about like which one of these type of championship level pieces can we acquire to really, you know, raise the ceiling of this team.
Yeah.
And we're thinking about all these names. We're hearing the Nas Reeves of the world before he got his extension. We're hearing Brooke Lopez. We up until free agency, we were hearing about Bruce Brown, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when you're at the draft and we're kind of all thinking, dude, we're in a position where we're coming off a Western Conference Finals appearance and we have like actual assets to trade to make this roster better and keep our core intact. And I really just think as soon as we got to pick number 17 and made a selection, and it's not about JHS, Raj, it's just the fact that we made a pick. What in the world was the thought process of a team that you think is a contender? We all went into the season thinking the Lakers are going to be a contender come hell or high water. And you draft a 20-year-old?
Especially a guard.
Yeah, a guard. You draft
a guard on a team that already has point guard and shooting guard pretty much solidified. Right, and then you sign your biggest free agency acquisition is another guard?
Yes. But I think that was the first red flag of the offseason where, you made a draft pick. Like, that's just like, dude, you're contender level team. If you're going to make the draft pick, you know they're not going to contribute, right? The Denver Nuggets, for example, drafted Julian Strother, and we're not going to see him in the playoffs. Maybe. I mean, if they're blowing the team out, hopefully we don't see him in our series because that means something really bad happened. Something went terribly wrong.
Or maybe something really good. Maybe
or something good. Yeah, maybe.
I like that. That's where we all go first.
Yeah. But like, I think that was the first red flag for sure. And just some of the moves that we made. I know we were all hyped about bringing these guys back because we never had any semblance of continuity outside of our two stars in the whole LeBron AD era. As soon as we made the trade that this Lord Voldemort, I don't even want to mention the trade that we made a couple years ago. But it's just one of those things where, you know, that was kind of a red flag. And we kind of compounded that mistake with our MLE signing that, like you said, Ant, that we hard capped ourselves for. And then clearly we went through the course of the season and kind of all had the understanding like, okay, there's some problems here. Whether or not there's injuries or not, they're still at its foundation. There's some issues here, and I think you had a golden opportunity to try and address it, and it almost even kind of felt like one of your star players was kind of like, hey, like, let's try to fix this now.
Yeah.
Because we got to go to the playoffs this year. Like, and I just think it was always – that's always, to me, is going to be a missed – opportunity, especially when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. When do we know the next time we're gonna get 76 games from Anthony Davis, 65 plus games from LeBron James? And let's just say it now, I think both those guys are all NBA. You just never
should
know.
Be. I mean, we never know with how voters are gonna treat Anthony Davis. Raj, like I hate to put you back in your feelings and emotions from over the course of the day, but like, you know, again, like we could keep on talking. I know you probably don't want to talk about JHS any further, so we can segue away from that if you want.
I just want to speak on that real quick because I think obviously JHS, it looks worse because of the picks around it, right? Brandon Pajemski, Jaime Jaquez, all not just playing well but contributing to winning. Like Pajemski, his team didn't make the playoffs, but he was starting for them. Jaquez looks absolutely incredible. I think the thinking was in the logic, which I can get behind, at least just the logic of it, was that usually I don't think the Lakers thought they would be picking around this area very often. So, and the scouting department is the one part that I think most fans would accept as the most elite part of their franchise, right? At least whatever struggles they have with the coaching staff, with the general manager, the scouting department is really the one that people hold in high regard.
It's a low bar, and but yeah.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, like you look around the league, the amount of young Lakers that are doing well, Josh Hart just had an incredible game. And I think that's what it was. It was the trust in that. And their trust in their picks, and Jalen Huccifino, I'd argue, played well in the G League. I know that doesn't mean much to a lot of people, and a lot of people weren't watching those games or weren't courtside for a lot of them like I was. But
you think
like,
Rob was watching those games?
I didn't see him at any games, so I don't know. But, you know, shout out Max Christie. He was there for a few. Austin Reeves came to a game. But no, so like I totally understand. I think the thinking was you have a deep team. I think me and Rome, we spoke about this. We were high on Gabe Vincent in terms of like for just sure. like what he was coming off of the playoffs, how he could contribute, how he's also D'Angelo Russell insurance, right? I think that was the thinking behind it. You had a roster that was 10, 11, 12 deep or whatever to start this season. There's no way anyone expected JHS to play. And yeah, maybe you could have moved him for a piece here or there. I just think the thinking was you have a team deep enough that should be able to contribute. And it didn't work out that way. I think the lineups had a lot to do with it in terms of who we started. And maybe I'll never get a chance to see the team fully realized. But that's how I don't really look at this season in terms of the JHS pick or even the like hard capping. I think this team had kind of enough if it got the ramp it needed. It just started off so late. Like it started off on the ramp way later than it should have. So that's my only thing with JHS. I'm not saying he's gonna be a great player. I don't even know like what his ceiling is. I think guards that are 18, 19 who have like that is the toughest role in the NBA to learn. Like absolutely. Judging him on what he's doing in absolutely. 4 or 5 minute game stretches is just that just is not productive.
It's not even like Rome said, it's not necessarily about JHS specifically. It was
right.
using the pick on a player, right? And if you are going to use a pick on a player, that guy does have to like help you that year. Like that player does have to find a way. And again, like that's where drafting a guard when you have three guards basically heading into that season, that's where it really hurts you. And I guess technically they didn't have Gabe at the time that they had drafted JHS, right? Because the draft takes place before free agency.
Yeah.
So then it makes the Gabe signing look even a little crazy. Iffier to me. But where I get hung up on is last year they didn't use all of the first rounders that they could possibly use because they were like, well, we can use that first rounder in the offseason and we can combine that first rounder with some expiring contracts or with some guys on non-guaranteed contracts or guys on team options who could be waived after the trade goes through. And then they and instead of like using that pick in that way, they wind up taking a player there, right? And like I don't know, it's the logical inconsistencies that really bother me, right? It's the notion that like okay, we are going to focus on continuity, but like your coach didn't get the memo. You know, okay, we're going to hold on to this asset right now because in the off season, we'll be able to turn that asset into something bigger. Yep. And then you don't, you know, and this year, right. This year at the deadline, it was just like we heard when they chose not to draft or not to trade Russ the first year that he was on the roster. It was like, well, this team is not fixable. This season is not salvageable, you know, as it stands right now. So why keep on, you know, pushing more chips into the middle of the table. But I think it's pretty clear that this team with a couple marginal upgrades actually would have been pretty damn good, you know? And I know people always go back to, well, look at the guys who were actually moved and of the guys who were actually moved, you know, which of those guys were really going to help you. I think there's some semantical and logical tricks being played there. Those aren't the only players who were available at the time. You know, the Lakers made a choice. The Lakers and I was told at the deadline that part of their thought process on not trading for somebody at the deadline was they didn't think that they were going to get Vanderbilt back, and they didn't think that they were going to get Gabe back. And now it turns out you didn't get Vanderbilt back in the regular season, and you did wind up getting Gabe back in the regular season. But like, even there, you brought in Spencer Dinwiddie because you didn't think Gabe was going to come back. And there's no consistent train of thought with anything that the Lakers are doing. It frankly feels a lot like Darvin Ham's rotation policies, right? Where when the game is close, he can't help himself. He's just going to keep firing subs in there. Last night, the Lakers opened the game up really, really well. D'Angelo Russell was playing his ass off. The starters are you know, really playing well. And you know, only like 6 minutes into the game, you get Spencer Dinwiddie out there. And it's just that sub pattern going back to what Darvin Ham considered like your regular rotation, that winds up leading to Austin Reeves only playing 33 minutes and getting 25 minutes of Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent out there. Like, none of what the Lakers seem to do here has any like long-term view, you know. And I know it's difficult when you have LeBron James at the phase of his life that he is right now to like really feel confident in betting and putting together a plan while he remains in his prime, because you don't know how long he's actually going to be in his prime. But I feel like I wrote this for Silver Screen and Roll, I think 2 years ago now, maybe three. Actually, I think it was back when they didn't trade Russ. So whatever, however many years ago that was, I think that was 2 or 3 years ago. And I said, like, the statement that Rob Pelinka and the Lakers are making there is they don't believe that LeBron and AD can be the core of a championship team. And that's what I keep coming back to when they make these decisions to kind of only, you know, step halfway into the, you know, into the pot and halfway into the fire, you know. You're either trying to win a championship or you're not, you know, and that's the Lakers' own policy. That's their own MO, and them choosing to operate in the way that they have. I think this is what it looks like. You know, you get, you're good enough to compete, but you're not really good enough to actually beat, you know, a team like Denver. And that's where like for me being a Laker fan, even a LeBron fan and a basketball fan, that's where I feel like the Lakers have kind of done a disservice to basketball, not believing in LeBron, not believing in Anthony Davis. That's what really hurts me. Rome, would you, I saw you kind of nodding along while I was making that point. Do you think that's too harsh?
No, it's, you know, I think there's certain players, right? Kobe falls into this category, and like even on other teams, a guy like Steph Curry, I'd say falls into the category where when you're an all-time great, and I'm talking like when it's all said and done, 20 years from now, you're going to be more remembered than the rosters you had and the teams that you were on, almost, because you're just that big of a star.
Yeah.
You have to be on that timeline. And I feel like it almost becomes, and you know, this could be an ego thing, this could be a pride thing, because the Lakers are so historic, but I feel like LeBron's legacy is almost more important than mostly anything else while he is on the Los Angeles Lakers.
That's what he signed up for.
And
like that was the agreement that he and the Lakers made, was like,
and it's something that Rob is
handing over my legacy to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Rob has even like said, like, this is our job to preserve and cultivate his legacy. And to your point, like, where have we seen them do that? Like, where is that actually taken place, where it's like, you know, it's one thing to not want to just do anything a star level player says, but the moves that you make have to show that you're trying. And I think to Ant's point, sometimes it doesn't feel like they're trying. I think if you, just to go back really quick to the offseason, like a lot of what we did, re-signing Vando and getting a guy like Gabe, getting Rui, getting D'Lo, Austin, one of the reasons why I think, you know, they did all those things, and I think Rob actually alluded to this, is like they want to build with this core kind of like post LeBron. It was almost like, hey, we're making, this could work right now with LeBron, but we really wanted to work when LeBron's gone. And it's like, dude, if you're making decisions based on when LeBron's going to leave, you're not fully locked in and invested to the present, because right now you have LeBron James and we don't know how much longer we're going to have it. All we know is that it's not going to be much longer. And so
remember with Lou that they didn't want to give him a contract that outlasted LeBron's original contract. Think like, back now how stupid what? That looks, given that LeBron is now on his second or third contract.
Yes. He's about to be like the longest tenure
coming summer.
Him and the Lakers are going to have like the longest tenure like of his career, like at this point. Like it's
he passed Miami already, I think.
He's almost giving you more chances to like, yo, figure this out and like help me, like help, you know. So
I don't know, what people around the league keep wondering is like, where was this patience with a much smarter organization in Miami?
Yeah.
By the time he went back to Cleveland, they had their shit together better than I would argue than the Lakers currently have theirs right now.
I agree.
Where was the patience there? You know, with your one is your hometown team, and one is the organization that you say you went to and learned how to win. You go to the Lakers, and like, there are other factors here where there's always going to be other factors, but like, where's that patience now?
I feel like we've been living in these extremes, right? Like, I think after the 2020 title and then the 2021 season, we kind of went and sold off every piece, right? KCP was gone. Kuzma's gone. This is my worry also with the Darvin Ham situation. I know, like, both of you have been pretty out loud about wanting him gone. And I feel like once he's gone, we're going to also over-index and just get a coach that has a ton of experience as well, right? That's the coach that you bring in.
Jeff Van Gundy, baby.
Jeff Van Gundy.
Mark Jackson.
I don't think Mark Jackson will ever work for
TV. No, please.
Hopefully not.
Going back to last summer real quick, because you guys were going over kind of the situation and not choosing a team. I guess not going star hunting is kind of the background noise on that, right? In terms of like not trading some of these pieces. I think about this with the Warriors who didn't make the playoffs. That gives you a license to kind of be crazy in the summer, right? Like if you don't make the playoffs, it gives GMs kind of a license to kind of go nuts and trade off any piece that they want. I think also when you go a little farther in the playoffs, it also gives you a license to kind of keep things as they are. And I think like the Lakers were going down this direction so many times. How many times were we watching a team where four or six of the players were on minimum contracts? And we're like, how do you win this way, right? One star goes out. And I think that's why they went into this form of like paying guys on longer deals. I think the league has gotten better. The league is too good now where you can't just flip your roster every year, in my opinion. Like I think Denver kind of showed that. I think other teams around the league showed that. You have to have at least some semblance of continuity, which is why I think the Lakers went this way. Trade deadline, like you could kind of argue who they should have traded for. I'm not really sure exactly the piece that would kind of save us, especially against Denver, but that's how I see last offseason. I don't really see it as a place where they should have gone and sold off a lot of pieces. I think you would have lost a lot of those guys for nothing if you did that, right? Rui was a free agent. Austin was a free agent. Vando was a free agent. D'Lo was a free agent. So a lot of guys were tough to kind of just sell off at that part. And then at the halfway point, I think they, just like all of us here, saw a roster that was underutilized, not living up to its potential and had a large gap to kind of reach. They kind of made the decision not to make any trades. So I don't see that as like the reasons why we're in this place. I think there are previous ones like the Zubac move, the Caruso trade, the Russ trade that you brought up. Those are ones are the reason why we're kind of stuck in this middle ground. And KCP, right, is on the freaking Denver Nuggets. And Zubac is killing the Mavericks. Like that's the stuff to me I think back more than just this last offseason.
How much stuff we just listed? How many GMs or presidents of basketball operations have that long a list of fuck ups and still like we know is going to be back next year? It's kind of nuts, right? Like, it's not a very long list there. And yeah, you won a championship, and that's worth pointing out. And the Lakers were in the Western Conference Finals last year, and that's going to be the reason that is used that he returns or whatever. But that's a lot of screw ups. The name of this video is "How Can the Lakers Bounce Back Against the Seemingly Inevitable Nuggets." We haven't talked about that at all. We have a few minutes here at the end before I have to rush off and I'm gonna be on a different show here in a second. But I want to know if there, like, I don't have a ton of hope as it is. I don't know how much hope everybody else here has. I think Raj probably has more than Rome and me combined. Yeah, for sure. But I guess that allows me to start with you, Raj. Like, can the Lakers bounce back and at least make it competitive?
I just want to shout out Rome, because Rome's usually also like he's in the optimistic lane that I'm on, not as much, but he is. And so, like, they do the coaches' den on Twitter, and they do the Twitter.
Oh yeah, I should have shouted that. I was gonna make that. Well, if Shub was here, I was gonna make it a coaches' den, All Access Lakers Lounge crossover. This is like a full on Avengers episode. But
yeah. So usually
they call us when the Avengers in playback, bro. They call us mm-hmm. Avengers.
I'll watch one of those movies one day, but like I tapped in after like my rewatches, but last night I tapped in like a little bit late after the after our pod around 12:31 a.m. I forgot what time it was, and Rome was just, I'm dejected, I'm done, I'm out. He's like, they've kind of killed my hope. So it's tough, because I think if you're just looking at this series and just this year, last season didn't happen, I think there's more stuff you could take. Like, if you just look at it from what happened in game two, you dominated most of that game. You had a team that's maybe the best team in the league on the ropes, right? Like, backtracking, trying to figure out how to come back. And like, you just had a terrible, really, fourth quarter. So you can kind of take some stuff from there. I think Anthony Davis found things that he can be successful at. We forced Denver to adjust. And I think that's a skill in itself, where you can kind of know this is the other answer that they have, and you can prepare for that. You have 2 days of film to prepare for that. So there's things in that manner. I think this is more of like a mental battle the Lakers have to get through. Like, it's kind of off the court now. You've shown that you can hang with them on the court for long enough stretches that your stars can put it away. But it's the mental kind of fight to me, where can you win? Can you be disciplined? Can you stay consistent when you're up 15? Can you still run back? Can you still put a body on Aaron Gordon like the seventh straight time that he throws an elbow in your back neck and the ref doesn't see it? I'm not saying he's doing stuff like that, but just like the physical manner. Okay. But like the physical manner that Denver plays with, it's tough to just continue to throw your body on there and continue to be thrown to the floor and still have to do it again on the next possession. So that's where I think they have to kind of fight this, but one game at a time. You get game three, though. Like, there's you get game three.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. You have no idea what that is, Raj, but like, Rome, how optimistic are you? How much hope do you have left here in the tank going into game three?
You know, I've been saying in like spaces and stuff, it's the first of four. Right. So no matter what happens, it's not over until a team wins four games. So whatever that means, that's kind of where I'll stay here. Right. Like, I'm here. But, you know, it's one of those things. I like that Raj kind of mentioned like the mental part of it, because there is a human element of like just kind of like devastation. Right. Like,
yeah,
I feel like
last night.
Yeah. I feel like we kind of. It's weird because we lost 10 straight times, okay? And I know a lot of people talk about it being the same script over and over, but it's like, in a weird way, I feel like these last two games have been the best games that we've given the Denver Nuggets. And it's, for me personally, I feel like a lot of it was like us shooting ourselves in the foot. And that's what happens when you're not that disciplined of a team, because your coach kind of is the – it's a symbiotic relationship with a team being disciplined and a coach that has like good principles and like establishes that level of discipline, like from bottom top to bottom of their roster. But regardless, I feel like we've given them really, really good haymakers, and something that a lot of teams haven't been able to show Denver. And I just feel like if you can get over that first mountain, right? And that's just winning, right? If you can get over that, like, there's always going to be a level of a puncher's chance. And the thing that we have, I think, to our advantage, and which sounds weird to say an advantage when you're 0-2, but we have LeBron James, and he's one of the most mentally tough players that this league's ever seen. And I think that can be instilled within every other player on the roster. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, it's first of four, so that's kind of where I – that's really my main part of it. It's not over until a team wins four, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that they needed to win game one. And I definitely thought that they needed the split coming out of Denver, you know, to not only not get the split, but then also not get it in such excruciating fashion really, really hurts. We have a few seconds here before we get out of here to play or to get to a few of these super comments. Don't have time to play the fuck Boston every game. So, or for all of these, so you can imagine it. Justin Tyndall writing, I think we could beat this team if we had a good coach. Ham is incapable of adjusting to Malone. Malone's halftime adjustments. Game one, 60 first half points, second half 43. Game two was 58 to 41. This is why I don't have a ton of faith, because it's hard to hire a new head coach between games two and three. It's kind of difficult there. That's not something you see happen very often. Brandon Oeming writing, I don't understand Ham's thought process. D'Lo has it going, and you sub him out early in the first. Do your normal rotation. Also, no challenge for the Brown foul. Again, don't have a ton of faith that the Lakers would fire Darvin Ham before game three. It makes this whole matchup really, really difficult. Also, Brandon Oeming writes, got to take Spencer out of the rotation and just play Gabe. This I really agree with. You got to pick between those two guys.
Yeah. Yes.
And roll. Yes. Like, how many times have we said this, right? Like, play your best players. Ride them until they are actually exhausted. And I think we saw some fatigue last night, but I didn't see exhaustion. And you know, because of that, that makes last night's game all the more difficult. We have two more. So Justin Tyndall, again, some positivity. My favorite Lakers win is the Ori game winner, game four against the Kings to avoid 3-1. Mm. A close second is the game four overtime win in the 09 finals. I mean, the best Lakers game in the history of my life, I think that I will ever experience, is beating Boston in game seven. Like, that's just, it was painful.
It was such a rock fight too. Like,
Oh my God. Oh. And it took Kobe grabbing 16 boards to like pull that thing out at the end. And you like make amends for losing to them two years prior. You own that era. It was just, that was great. Finally, last one here. Hey Nuggets, I didn't hear no bell. It's, you know, they're shining the bell. They're polishing up that bell. And look, game three, it's your season. We've said this, I think, for three straight games now, but you lose game three and it is nighttime. It is bedtime. Fat ladies start warming up, and it is just.
That's when I'll give up. We lose game three, it's over.
Like, that's when we start looking at draft prospects. That's when we start looking at draft prospects, and
that's when Roz watches an Avengers movie. Yeah,
that's the countdown to summer league. Honestly, that's when you start counting down to summer league. Yeah.
All right, I have to run. This was an absolute blast. Next time we do this, we're going to do this for a little bit longer. Rome, thank you a ton for hopping on. Raj, as always, thank you for hopping on. You can find us for this next game, for game three, on All Access Lakers. We will be there. We will be sweating it out with you. And we've been there all year. We've been doing this together all year. It's been an absolute blast. So check that out. Check out Rome's Coach's Den as well. Check out Raj's Lakers Detailed as well. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.